Okay, good afternoon, everybody. Can everyone hear me okay? Excellent, great. Is everybody looking forward to the party tonight? I know I am, that's for sure. Well, thank you very much for attending. My name is Tony Sanchez. I'm with Citrix Systems. I work on a strategic alliance team, and what my job is at Citrix is really focusing purely on scalability of Zen Desktop on Hyper-V. So what I do pretty much from day to day is work with our alliance partners, figuring out what's the best design, what's the newest technology from storage to network virtualization to processors, SSD, non-SSD. We do all this stuff and we figure out what's the best way for us to combine a jointly recommended design between Citrix, Microsoft, and it could be Dell, it could be HP, IBM, Cisco, any of those particular alliance vendors. Today, I'm lucky enough to be joined by a couple of my colleagues from Citrix. If you guys want to go ahead and introduce yourself.
With
Yep, I think you're live.
Greg Torres, Citrix Product Architect at Citrix.
And I'm Doug DeLuca, team lead of desktop solutions for Citrix on Citrix team.
Excellent. Thanks, guys. Later on, you're going to hear from the Citrix on Citrix team. A lot of the work that we're going to talk about today is going to be focusing on what's new in Zen Desktop 7. So we're going to go ahead and get started. Here's our agenda, what we're going to cover. If you were in my previous session on Tuesday, a couple of these slides may look the same, so I'm going to apologize. Bear with me. There are some people that didn't attend, so I do have to repeat just a tiny bit of content, maybe 3 to 4 slides. Tops are going to be potentially the same thing you saw, but the rest is going to be net new content that you have not seen before. So we're going to go over what's new in Zen Desktop 7, just a basic architecture overview. We'll then go over what's new in Provisioning Services 7. Just by show of hands, how many of you in here are Citrix administrators, architects, engineers, any of the above? Awesome. Very good news. Well, thank you very much for doing that. We'll also go through some demos. I have just a few to showcase today. And then as long as the internet does not go down and the demo gods are with me, I'll be able to show you some new integration with Provisioning Services 7. We'll also go through single server scalability results. That's basically what I live, eat, and breathe all day long. I try to figure out what's the max amount of users I can potentially push on a blade or a server at any given time. And in this case, what's new is it's going to be our latest codes in Desktop 7 on Windows Server 2012 with Hyper-V. We'll go over a couple designs that are new, part of Zen Desktop 7 with Provisioning Services 7, and then I'm going to go ahead and pass the baton over to the guys over at Citrix on Citrix from the IT team. They're going to go over an interesting design that should be pretty cool for you guys to learn about. At the very end, we're going to do something called RPSLS, something I did on Tuesday. So if you're in my session on Tuesday, you know I like to give stuff away, and today we're going to give away a solid-state drive. So someone's going to be lucky enough to win a solid-state drive at the end of the show, so stick around. All right, so let's get started. Just a couple simple marketing slides, architecture stuff, but then again, I have to bring this up because not everybody is super familiar with Citrix and Microsoft. They're familiar with maybe just Zen Desktop, maybe ESX, whatever that may be, but in terms of the alliance that we have and how long we've been a partner for, it's kind of good to kind of set pace and go ahead and let you guys know about how long we've been working with Microsoft in general. So you can see in terms of whether it's App Vert, Desktop Vert, we're definitely number one in terms of working with Microsoft. So we've had this relationship with them for quite a very long time, whether it's User State Vert, App Vert, OS Vert. Pretty much any of those above designs you can do in Zen Desktop. And it gets even better as we talk about version 7, which is coming out this quarter for those of you that are Citrix customers. For those of you that are not, you should be able to go ahead and download an evaluation version, work with your local teams, and figure out how to get this implemented in a proof of concept. So 23 years of partnership. This is a really interesting thing because a lot of people are new to Citrix. Believe it or not, I've been working with it since the year 2000, so I'm familiar with it. But I can't always take for granted that some of you are not. You don't know about XenApp. You don't know about MetaFrame. You didn't know about how Citrix started 23 years ago. So it's important to take a little bit of a history lesson from what we've done to understand where we are right now. So, of course, we started in 1989. That's when we were founded. That's when ICA, our proprietary protocol, pretty much was unveiled to the world, and when we started working with Microsoft on the OS2 platform. So throughout the years, we fast forward, you're going to see some pretty interesting animation here and also some product enhancements that have occurred over the last 20 years. So we've shipped WinFrame. We get to this point, we started shipping products called MetaFrame, MetaFrame XP, all these things jointly designed to work on the Microsoft Server operating system. We've also had changes in our code. So we were not just that one-trick pony that you may know Citrix. A lot of you that may be in this room or online may have used Citrix long, long time ago when it was Windows NT 4.0. And you haven't really seen what's happened since then. So there's been a massive amount. It's not your grandfather's Citrix anymore. So if you think we just do AppVert, and when those guys would give you a server-based desktop, you're wrong. We do 10 times that, and then some. So over those years, we've done a lot of integration. We've won numerous awards from Microsoft, IE of the Year, Global Infrastructure of the Year. The list goes on and on and on. And the reason we win those awards is because we come up with new innovative ways to help Microsoft deliver those new operating systems and those new platforms with our technology. Last year, we announced Project Excalibur, which was our massive change to unify and get to a better design, a better platform to work on the latest platforms with Microsoft, which in this case, System Center 2012 and Windows 8. So with all that in mind, if you've done your work and you've been an administrator, you've probably figured out that sometimes our products are complicated because there were multiple consoles. And I'll be the first to admit that is true, because I've lived in your shoes. I was a XenApp administrator for a company that had 90,000 users. I sat there every day. I worked in those same trenches that many of you do work in. So I'm not just someone who's up here talking and doesn't have any experience, because I have some. Now, granted, I haven't been in IT that long. That's why I brought these guys, because they can tell me the real deal, because I have about 2,000 plus fictitious friends I like to play with every day when I do scalability tests. But these guys can back me up. They've got 8,000 plus people that we're going to really hear from. So our goal was to, like I had in the previous slide, I'll just simply step back one slide, was to really figure out the best way for us to combine our consoles, to make it simpler, to unify all the work that is painful from day to day for you to do your job so that you can set up our infrastructure seamlessly and simple. So with that in mind, that brings us to a couple weeks ago when we announced Xen Desktop 7, which is what I was talking about earlier, and there's a new release of Xen Desktop that's due out this quarter. So it's definitely much easier if you're not current with our products and you haven't played with them in a while. You got to give it a shot. You can't just sit here and say, well, we had this bad taste in our mouth from Citrix and it got implemented incorrectly 5 years ago. You got to give it another shot if you've had a negative experience, because the Fortune 50, the Fortune 100, the biggest companies in the world use our technology. So I did actually run across some customers that did say that, and they're like, well, it's not that your software didn't work. Maybe it just wasn't installed properly. It wasn't architected correctly. And those are the key things I want to make sure you understand as we talk about some of the architecture designs that you can look at implementing to make sure you do design it correctly from day one. So let's go to some of the releases that are simpler and more intuitive now with version 7. So of course, we talk about FlexCast. And FlexCast, if you're not new with us, this is the biggest number one thing we offer. This is what makes us number one in the market, not because we have a great protocol. That's always been the case. But a great protocol only takes you so far in this world. You have to have more value add for customers like you. So what we're able to do now is deliver more than just Windows Server operating systems. We're able to do a lot more than that. We're able to do desktops and apps and then other ideas like remote PC. This is a use case which is really, really catching on, because if you think about the licensing fees, and I hate to say it that way, but they are fees you have to pay for VDI in the server computing world, there's another way to do it. What if you have desktops that are perfectly fine that sit underneath your cubicle and you want to remotely access them? Why can't you? That's a use case for remote PC. Maybe you're not at the point where you're ready to go full-fledged 100% VDI or 50% VDI, 50% terminal server, whatever that may be. That FlexCast model that we offer allows you to do that. So that is a major design feature that we bring to the table. In terms of configuration, the studio has gotten a lot easier. We actually have new intuitive wizards that make it simpler for you to go through and deploy the desktops by using single common image management, as well as doing more intense things like auditing if you want to go down that route. If you're a big company that has a huge infrastructure, and you need to make sure that people are doing their job correctly, someone didn't screw up making a maintenance change when they weren't supposed to, you need to do an audit because of SOX requirements, that is also another key differentiator of version 7 that allows you to get that granular detail. You can't get it with very other competitors, but we offer that in version 7. If you also are a big shop and you want delegate administration, and I mean not just a guy that can read, but a guy that can do some of this and some of that, the delegated administration in Windows 7, Zen Desktop 7, really changes that. That's something you need to look into when you have a big design. You have some Zen Desktop administrators, you have some configuration manager administrators, you have all these people that may have to work and play inside this environment. That delegated administration is important to consider. As far as simplified apps and desktops, even easier now on the console, because we've taken things that were a separate console, such as storefront and profiling, and we put them into the same console, as well as the ability to use Active Directory group policies or policies from within the Zen Desktop controller. So that alone reduces the time for you to go ahead and set up and configure Zen Desktop. From a platform perspective, it's Windows 8, Windows Server 2012, System Center 2012, SP1, SQL Server 2012. We are also working with Microsoft to support the latest and greatest, which you heard about now, Windows Server 2012 R2, next version of Windows 8, you may have heard names like Blue and so forth. We're also working with them to make sure we support that. As far as monitoring, I talked about this a little bit earlier. While you can do all this great stuff in terms of administration and build, if you can't monitor the user experience from the login process all the way to the point where they're printing something and gather that data within our virtual channel subsystem, we don't have a great architecture then. So what if they log in quick? So what if they log in slow? If I don't know and I can't get the alerts I need and the monitoring I need from the same infrastructure, it doesn't do me jack. So in version 7, we've changed that with HDX Insight. We have the ability to go ahead and get this data from what's called the EUEM channel, which is a previous version from something called EdgeSight, where we can get all this data from our delivery agent that sits on that Windows operating system, which we'll go into later. And all that information we can display in a portal. So there's another session you can look at if you go to citrix.com and you look for some of the HDX Insight stuff. If you really want to get more information about monitoring, definitely go check that out. It's on our website. As far as architecture overview, just out of curiosity, who here has never done anything Citrix? So it's okay to raise your hand. Some people are new. So how many have not done anything in terms of Zen Desktop but are Zen App administrators? Good, a couple. So things are different. And it's important to understand what we can do in this new architecture, because having come from being just a Zen App administrator, if I were to learn Zen Desktop 7 now, I'd really want to understand what is so unique and so different, because I know server-based computing, that's all I know. So being able to understand how it works in terms of remote access to the broker are critical things. So it's not too much different than Zenapp. We still have our broker that's in the middle, and he's responsible, kind of like this traffic cop, for dictating which way you go. Do you get this particular desktop? Do you get a desktop that has Windows 7, Windows 8, Office 2010, Office 2013? That's the whole function of what the broker's job is, and also to assign it to particular users. Now, what's also unique is because you can see here in the model, we have hosted shared Windows 2012, 2008, R2 operating systems, also the traditional VDI, Windows 7 and Windows 8. Any one of these designs you can do in Zen Desktop 7 from the same single console. You don't have to necessarily do it from multiple consoles if you don't want to. You can do it all from within the studio. This is kind of what we're looking like now. In the past, we had multiple consoles, multiple databases, but now what's really brilliant that we did a hard amount of work on is we took the things that are the most used. So Director being the portal, the thing that you look at in terms of looking at user information, Studio being where you build your stuff. Think of Studio like an artist who uses a canvas to design something. Studio is your interface into building your desktop and app delivery architecture. All of that information writes to the SQL database. If you're a Zenapp administrator, you know you have to have a SQL database for your infrastructure. Well, guess what? In version 7, you don't have to worry about having separate SQL databases. You use 1DB for both VDI and for application virtualization, also known as Zenapp. So either way, you use one SQL database, which makes it simpler for you because you don't have to worry about any sort of differential issues between databases because it's just one single one that you use. At the very bottom of the chart, you'll see the thing or the acronym VDA. That's Virtual Delivery Agent. That is what we install on the Windows Server or Windows Client Operating System. So if you remember in the previous slides a few minutes ago, we supported Windows Server 2012 and Windows 2000 R2. Those would be the server OS workers. Server-based computing, running multiple users, one machine, same common scenario. But again, we're leveraging it all from one interface. And from the user's perspective, at the very top of the chart, they log into Receiver, and then they go through Storefront to go ahead and self-service and deliver those applications. That's their entry point into the system. But all of those consoles, Storefront, Delivery, Studio, all can be done from one machine, which is pretty cool. So let's go about what's new in PBS 7. And bear with me 1 second while I get a drink. There's a ton of stuff here. Of course, we support the latest Microsoft platforms. System Center 2012 SP1, Windows 8, Windows 7, Configuration Manager, and so forth. But what's even cooler about that is there's things that make this even more interesting for scalability. And this is the stuff that I pretty much live, eat, and breathe all day long. If you are familiar with Zen Desktop and you've used it on Hyper-V and you have it in production, you've always been aware that there's this annoying little thing that's called the legacy adapter. And it's painful in the aspect of VDI because we have to write a majority of all of our traffic through that legacy NIC. And what does that mean for Hyper-V? That means it actually decreases performance because we're not able to leverage all the goodness that comes from the synthetic NIC, which has all the bandwidth, all the virtualization capabilities built into it. In PBS 7, we're able to actually do what's called a legacy to synthetic NIC switchover. And the cool thing is you don't have to do anything to make that happen. It's automatic. When you install the VDA on your master image, what will happen is we'll insert a registry value key that goes to the process and say, okay, I've detected that you've got two network adapters. Of course, we still have to boot legacy. It's a requirement for Hyper-V. We can't change that. Microsoft hasn't changed that in 2012. But when we're post-Pixie and we're into Undi, we're going to go ahead and flip from legacy to synthetic. And what does that mean then? That means we went from 100 meg to the full bandwidth of what that synthetic NIC gives us. That also means that we're reducing CPU cycles off the partition of the Hyper-V host. So logically, that means we get an increase in scalability because we're doing less work, less NIC processing that has to occur on the host level. So this is a feature that's in PBS 7 by default. Any VM you create that's a provisioning service VM will automatically do this. Should you decide you don't want to do it, not a problem. You just go forward and you apply a registry key and it undoes it. BDM. One of the things that we've had in all previous versions of PBS is the ability to boot ISO. There are a lot of restrictions in some companies that say, we can't do Pixie. Pixie conflicts with Configuration Manager, conflicts with our blade building process, it conflicts with this and that. We've actually changed that. And so what we can do now in PBS 7 is actually create a BDM boot partition that you actually can call out instead of booting Pixie. So you're basically booting from a hard disk. And this hard disk has the IP address of that provisioning server you're going to stream your virtual disk from. So realistically, that means you don't necessarily have to use Pixie anymore unless you really, truly want to. So it's a choice. It's not a requirement. It's just a choice that you can do. So if you look here in the next slide, you can see when we go through this process, there's also this nice little VHD that says BDM VHD. That is what gets created when we go through the wizard. So I'll show you a little bit of this in the demo so you'll be able to see the whole thing. Clicker's a little bit slow. There we go. Okay, support for SMB3. If you are digging all the cool stuff that you've heard about SMB3 this week from Server 2012, we can support it. So if you're going to put your PBS servers on SMB3 share, or your PBS VMs, I should say, not a problem. As long as you set up your SMB3 in the correct way through VMM, we're going to point and create those PBS-based virtual images on the SMB3 share. Okay. This is probably one of the coolest features I like that is really, really neat. Having done this for the last couple years and built a lot of environments in scalability testing with Hyper-V, one of the most challenging things that is so taxing on VMM is going through the process of creating the right cache disks. And what that means is that when you go through the wizard or use PowerShell, whatever method you want, it's going to go ahead and copy this master write cache where we store all our temporary data from, but he has to copy it from one location to as many hosts as you're going to distribute it to. It works, but it's time-consuming, and it's also IOP-consuming because it has to copy this from this VHD from VMM over and over and over and over again. With this new automatic write cache creation, what we do is we go through this process of talking to Hyper-V. The VMM template that you have, that is your master image, has no write cache file, no VHD attached to it. It's empty. It's a true shell VM. In all the past when you built your VMs with PBS, you always had to have that VMM template, and you always had to have that write cache file so that you could call it out and your VMs would use that. Not with PBS 7. It's a choice. This is with all hypervisors. The question was, is this only with Hyper-V? You can use it on ESX, you can use it on vSphere as well. Zen Server, I believe so too. What is also unique that is not shown here, when you're doing this write cache creation that's really cool about Hyper-V, it is by default a dynamic VHDX file. So if you're doing a build, and let's say you're going to build a 4 gig write cache, normally you'd have to do your math and accommodate. 4 gig would be the max it could grow to. If it was a dynamic or fixed, it would be 4 gig. But since it's dynamic, you actually can save storage space. Because since it's going to be a dynamic VHDX from the get-go, you actually can use some really cool tools that are now on the PBS client to see what the amount of storage space you're using for that write cache is, which hopefully I'll be able to show you later on. So this is also a little bit of a storage saver, not a massive amount, but just a little bit, so you can actually better calculate how much storage you're going to use for your write cache. And you can see here, as I go through this process here, this little screen on the right-hand side shows my controller with my master disk. It also shows the write cache just at the bottom. Okay. No, not to my testing. And again, the question is their performance. It also depends on what you're storing it on. So the tests that I've done that you'll learn about here later on, I did not see a major performance hit. So again, the storage system is going to make a big difference. If you're doing NetApp, doing deduping, you're probably not going to see anything. But if you're doing commodity hardware, maybe. It all depends on what that is. So it's hard to say. So I'll give you a little bit of data from what I did on my tests later on. Okay, multiple NIC support, that's supported off the get-go. So if you've got some PBS VMs or servers that you want to leverage more than one NIC to get better throughput for your streaming service, simply check the box and you're good to go. All right, so let's see if I can do a quick demo. Most of these things you've already seen in the screenshot, but let me go ahead and see if we can pop over. All right, can you guys see my screen okay? Great, great. Let me jump over to my provisioning server here. Now, again, this is not the latest code. This is probably a month or so old. So I'll just also preface this by saying this is not RTM of our code. Things will change. The color may go from green to pink to yellow. So keep that in mind. We're still coding at this moment. So you may see some things change a little bit here and there. First thing I'm going to do is going to point to my controller address here. And it's going to go ahead and authenticate and pull up the host that I have already configured in Zen Desktop. I'll authenticate to VMM with my credentials. And it's going to go ahead and fetch and load all the templates. Now, it's going to provide about 4 or 5 or 6 templates that it should find in VMM right here by default. Now, I've done some of my cooking work ahead of time, and I've created some templates that have a write cache attached and some that don't. The ones that don't are using BDM. They're going to go ahead and simply go through the wizard, and it's going to create this process of building VMs. So what I'll do is I will choose this one, just so you can see what this looks like. And I'll select Windows 7 as my virtual disk for my master image I want to create. Let's just call it a test catalog. And we'll click Next. So we'll select Desktop Operating System, because this is a Windows 7 master image I'm using. And then I'll just say Fresh Random, just to make it simple. Now here's that thing you saw on the screenshot. What's nice about this is I'm inheriting this data here from my VMM master template. So if I want to use dynamic memory, which is highly recommended, go for it. You adjust those settings right here in your minimum max memory. You adjust your write cache. Your default is 6 gig. But remember, I mentioned it's also dynamic. It's not going to be 6 gig you're going to copy every time. It's going to be like 50 or 100 meg out the gate. And it will grow and shrink as needed when you go through your test or when you go through your boot process. So if I want to do BDM, I just select it right there. That's it. Click Next, create a couple accounts, stick all these desktops. I'm going to create an OU right here. And then I'll just kind of clean up this name so I don't get it confused. And finish. So it's going to go through, do the normal work, talk to VMM, create the desktops. And if I go back to my VMM or my Hyper-V console server here, and we bring up the console, we should see one booting up at the bottom. To 7 test, where is it at? There. So it's going to go through this process. When it creates it, it automatically powers on the VMs immediately. That's what the new wizard will do when you're using either BDM or when you're more specifically using the new write cache auto create function. So I will tell you that if you're going to do this in bulk, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of VMs right away, please make sure your server isn't already busy, because it's going to get really, really CPU bound if you try to boot 100, 200 machines out the gate, have them boot up, attach this write cache file as needed, and then go through this process. So you can see here it's starting to run. It's going to go through, and if I look at my settings real quick, just take a quick peek, you should see I have my drives already attached. So pretty standard process. It goes through, builds it, and then shuts them right down. So that's one of the new features that you can definitely take advantage of. Okay, next slide. Okay, provisioning stats. This is pretty cool stuff. These are some of this internal scalability tests that were done by a different team, but I thought the data was pretty valid, and I thought you guys would want to hear about it. So what they did is they did some real simple engineering tests to test a lot of these new designs internally at Citrix. The tests that I did will be later on, but this is specifically internal tests. I will also tell you that mileage will vary. So please don't look at these tests and say, he said he got X amount of desktops ablated, and I'm only getting half that. It's a synthetic test. So please keep that in mind. These are just design performance scalability numbers. So we definitely worked with our partners at NetApp. They had a NetApp storage array that they created all the desktops on. And our first one that we're going to look at is what they did for SMB. So what's interesting is they went through this whole process of whether we're doing Pixie, whether we're doing BDM. And in some scenarios, you'll see Pixie still is faster, and BDM is a little bit slower. Because remember, when we do BDM desktops, we have to boot them up, they have to add that disk, and we have to shut them back down. So there is a little bit of a penalty for doing that, but you do save time, because you don't have to worry about copying this write cache over and over and over again. So there are things you want to take into consideration. So if you look at here for creating 100 desktops, if we were doing PBS, it took about 25 seconds for the create process. And if we were doing BDM, roughly 30, 31 seconds and so forth. So these are things as you start to do the math, you start to figure out, well, if I'm going to create 1,000 on the fly, how long is it going to take me to do a boot device based or a Pixie based? They're all important things you want to look at as you design your new Zen desktop architecture. Next one is power on. If they're going to go through the power on process, how long does that take from 100 desktops to 1,000? Now, some of these tests were not completely finished, so you'll see some bars only have the color blue, some have the color orange, just because of lack of time. So it's really difficult to get all these tests done before we come to TechEd and present this to you. And of course, our code is still being developed, so our code changes throughout the week. So when I do this presentation again, which will be repeated in TechEd EMEA, there'll probably be newer data, newer scalability numbers. So I'd recommend checking this out in a couple weeks. I'll have some more data that's probably a little bit more accurate to our real code. Registration time. This is also important because you want to make sure as you design either one of these that your registration time is not super, super slow. If you're going to do these things with BDM, it may take a little bit longer to register because he has to go through this process of booting up and shutting down. So that may delay your time to register, especially if you're in a hurry. You need to provision 200 desktops instantly and you have an immediate 9/11 emergency you need to solve. These are things you're going to have to think about as you go through that process, which is the fastest way to do it, which is the most solid. Historically, PBS with Pixie has definitely been the most solid design. BDM is new. It doesn't mean it's not solid. It's just a new thing you need to take in consideration if you're going to go this route. The power off delete process is pretty good. You can see here for 100 desktops, it's pretty much on par between BDM and Pixie. Not really a big difference. But when you get to bigger machines or bigger quantities, 500 and above, then definitely that time is different and unique. And you need to consider that, because if you have to shut things down to do a quick maintenance, this could be how long it might take you to make that major change in the infrastructure. As far as cluster share volume, you can see here some new stuff. We do support that as well. If you're looking to provide or put your Zen Desktop infrastructure in a CSV read-only cache, we support that as well. So you can put your infrastructure in there. So you can see here from 100 to 1,000, 10 plus seconds of delay in between either one of those designs. Not horribly different, but things you want to keep in mind from the create process. And then the power on. Pretty much the same, whether you're doing Pixie or BDM through a cluster share volume. Not that much of a difference in reality for a 500 desktop. So also things to keep in mind as you go through this process. If you're going to do a CSV, you don't want to flood it so fast, so you want to make sure you do the right throttling. There's some really cool stuff I'll show you in the next couple slides that are really super important. I cannot stress this enough. You will crush your infrastructure if you do not apply the correct throttling. So we'll get into that next. Registration, not too bad. 500 desktops, whether I'm doing PBS, Pixie, or BDM, it's about the same to register them, 20 plus minutes in either scenario. And then delete process. It actually is faster to delete the BDM than the Pixie because it's a little bit quicker process. So that is a nice plus about that architecture. All right, so from that, we get into my results of what I did with HP on a BL460 Gen 8 blade. So let's talk about what I had. And these are results that I've not published yet on the web. I've not blogged about them yet, so it's the first time we're actually releasing some of this information. I will stress we're still working on this. This code and this information from these results is like a month and a half old. It's not the most newest version of our code. We're doing some changes inside HP Labs to make this even better and faster. But what we did something that was unique is we actually included Fusion I.O. cards into each and every blade. And HP has a pretty cool agreement with Fusion I.O. where they actually can provide 1 terabyte cards in each one of their BL460 blades, which is really, really cool. This particular blade was fully loaded, super blade on Red Bull. I mean, it had 256 gig of RAM, and it had almost the latest and greatest Intel Xeon procs, as well as a Fusion I.O. card. So it was super, super wicked fast. As far as the workloads, because I don't have 8,000 friends like my colleagues here, I've got 2,000 fake friends. But those 2,000 fake friends that I do work with do a pretty good job at stress testing the hardware in our application infrastructure. So what we did is we used some light and medium workloads by one of our key partners called VSI, who's up here at the front. So if you are interested in learning about breaking, making, seeing how all your stuff works, you definitely want to chat with these guys. So we did some pretty simple stuff, Office 2010, printing, the traditional light user workflow that most people do. We use a generator, and what their workload generator does is it goes through a real simple process. It launches these applications in a scripted manner, all different and unique for each different user that comes in, to log them in different orders and start them. And it goes through this process where we calculate, and I watch all this data with perfmod. I'm looking to make sure that I don't see any weird issues with HDX or anything that would skew the results in any matter. The way I built this is no different than the way you would build your Zen Desktop infrastructure. Same process, no special tweaks, no hacks to the kernel, no hacks to VMM, straight UBI out the box. There's nothing unique I did other than this code is just not publicly available at this point for our stuff. As far as my client VM, this is what it was. It was a Windows 7 X64, and what we wanted to test, because we're using a Fusion I.O. card and because it can handle massive amounts of IOPS, we wanted to use the light workload of VSI because it is more IOP intense. Using things like Excel and running and calculating a lot of this data, manipulating it is important because you want to stress that storage subsystem to really see how well it goes. Now, the VSI stuff only, it worked across a single server infrastructure. We didn't do it in a big blade yet, or in a big cluster. We're doing that next, so keep in mind I only have results right now for this single server test, but in probably a couple weeks I'll have it for 16 blades on the whole cluster and so forth. As far as memory is dynamic memory, we use 760 as a starting point and 1536 as our max, and one virtual CPU for this VM. The write cache was created, and again, we use the wizard. I actually ate my own dog food. Normally, I do this with PowerShell when I create 2,000 desktops. This time I used the wizard. So I went through everything as if a traditional customer were to build it and chose not to do PowerShell. The coolest thing that I absolutely love about Windows 2012 that you could never do before in 2008 R2 was modifying the bin file. By show of hands, who knows what that does? The bin file is this cool thing that's basically saving your memory state of your operating system at any given time. The bad thing about that is it requires disk space. So in the provisioning server world, we take all of our data and we throw it in what's called the write cache, this temporary file that exists either on the Hyper-V host, or in this case, the write caches existed on the Fusion I/O cards. But when you're doing this with Hyper-V, you have to think a little bit more strategic, because not only do you require write cache, you also require a bin file. So I have a slide a little bit later that will talk about that. But you have to keep these things in consideration. With Windows 2012, we actually can disable that. And I've got a link that shows how to do that and a PowerShell script that you can execute. As far as creating and booting everything, I did a 225-user test, all 225 desktops created in Zen Desktop Studio. The time to boot all of them was 22 minutes, which is pretty quick. The bad thing about that was that I was using some pretty intense throttling. And I mentioned that earlier. I have some screenshots that I'll show. You don't want to mess with that throttling. It's at a reason, or it's at a specific number for a reason. Unless you are absolutely keen, you do your homework, and you know for a fact you can adjust that throttling, then do it. If not, then don't, because the result is you'll crush the logical processors on your Hyper-V host like I did. I pegged it at 100% when I adjusted my throttling, and my power on actions were 30 VMs a minute. That's intense. The default is 10. So I wanted to see how much could I push on this blade, as well as the storage and everything else that was attached to it. So I highly don't recommend that you modify that up to 30 unless you know for a fact you can handle that, because you will see negative performance immediately out the gate. However, if you take it a little bit differently and you keep it as is, in this case I did the same process again, I kept my power on actions at 15 minutes. It's a little bit different in terms of, let's go back a slide. It's a little bit different in terms of the boot. You can see here my time to boot was 20 minutes, where in the previous slide my time to boot was 22 minutes. So it's actually faster if I don't adjust my throttling, because I have more processing power. So again, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Leave it as is. So the time to register with the controller here is 20 minutes. Just to go back to the previous slide, the time to register with the controller was a little bit longer. 29 minutes. Don't mess with it, unless you absolutely know you can. The logical processor performed the best with this test at 15 actions per minute, so I upped it 5 just to see how well it performed, and it was averaging like 60 to 80% as all of my desktops powered on from 0 to 225. In terms of the scale results, I did another test, 240 VMs at this point, all powered on, all registered. 100% ready. 233 VMs actually ran the test. And so in terms of BSI, what that means is I got this beautiful number called a BSI max. And what that looks like is this. That means that when this test was done and I successfully passed these index metrics, made sure it was legit, I checked my perfmon counter, I went through all this work I had to do, it actually created a pretty good scalability result of 233 VMs that were considered a acceptable user experience. Now again, don't go out and say, hey, this guy said I can get 233 VMs on my host. No. Please, don't take this as gospel. This is a test to say that this is how your hardware and software could perform. Subtract your amount, antivirus, all that stuff comes into play because this does not have antivirus. I have other tests if you want to read about, they're on the blog site in the very beginning of this PowerPoint that talk about the impact of things like McAfee on ZenApp. If you're interested in stuff like that, I'll show you what those numbers look like. So please keep in mind, you gotta be really, really careful about taking this stuff to heart. So it does change for each environment. Here's what the processor looked like throughout that test. Pretty beat up. I mean, I hit it hard as much as I could. The peak time during the duration when the max user load was at that magic number was 94%. So I'm not saying that you should run your servers at 94%. I'm just saying in this particular test, this is how much I beat that up at. A safe number is roughly 80%, 85%. You shouldn't really go over 90 unless you're extremely constrained. In terms of RAM, average available was 6 gig out of that 256 gig I had loaded. So I use as much RAM as I could on that particular light workload. And with that in mind, I'd like to go ahead and pass the baton over to the guys from Citrix IT, and they're going to go over the next section of this presentation.
All right. Thank you, Tony. My name is Doug DeLuca. I'm the team lead for desktop solutions within the Citrix on Citrix group. And I just wanted to give you, paint you an overview, a picture of what we do internally with Citrix. So just as the group name says, Citrix on Citrix is just that. We take our own products and we roll them out to our employees internally. So we are the liaison between engineering and the rest of the business. So we, as the products come about and they're getting worked on and their builds and whatnot, we actually implement them into our lab in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. We have a lab that mimics our production systems fairly well. And as different builds of Zen App and Zen Desktop and other products come about, we'll drop those in the lab and start testing. So we can start off with maybe just everybody in the Citrix on Citrix group, 20 people. Maybe we'll open it up to IT, 200 or so employees. And then usually our final UAT is about 400 or 500 employees spread out through the business. So an SE might be able to launch a desktop or other employees and whatnot. So the value that we get from that is, you know, we actually have people that are working on the desktop and working in our solution in everyday scenarios. So we get that feedback and feed it back into engineering. So it works out good because then the anybody that wants to work on those products can work on it, cut their teeth on the latest and greatest. So with that being said, we can look at some numbers here. So we're 8,800 employees globally. About 80% of us are running currently Zen Desktop 5.6 in our everyday tasks. About 20% of those people are on pooled, and the other 80% of Zen Desktop users are on dedicated systems. So we need to be aware that, you know, as the products come through and move into production, that they are production ready. We don't live, you know, we don't have a production system in a vacuum, right? We have to work within the constraints that we have within our IT department. We're really no different than any other companies out there. So, you know, that's what is exciting about our team is that, you know, we need to make sure that we can roll this out to production and make sure that those systems are up and running for everyday use. So, this is a quote from my boss, Chris Roberts, back in Fort Lauderdale. And one of the things that we're looking to do this year with Zen Desktop 7 is run it on Hyper-V Server 2012 and System Center 2012. So it's really exciting for us because, you know, we've obviously been in partnership with Microsoft for 23 years. And we were looking, and the Citrix on Citrix team has been watching Hyper-V and the different aspects and the functionality and all the changes and whatnot that's coming about. So it just made sense for us to, you know, move in that direction. So we are right now in the middle of architecting and designing our Hyper-V implementation currently in our lab. And then we're going to look to move that into production a month or two after Zen Desktop 7 RTM. So we're on a very fast timeline, very excited about moving in this direction. And yes. Yes, Zen Server is in the picture. This is in parallel. So like I mentioned before, we are just like an IT department like everything else. So we don't, you know, that vacuum, we can't just every time we roll out a product and whatnot just flush out, you know, compute and storage and networking. We have to work within our budgets and our constraints. So, you know, brief overview, we are an HP shop. I started with the company about 12 years ago. I was at the ripe age of 20 years old, and used to, use compact 1850R servers and whatnot. And so over time, we've just grown that relationship with HP. So we've gone to, you know, C7000 enclosures. We run a combination of 460 G6, G7s, and soon to G8 half-height blades. So that gives us good density and good horsepower. With typically, we do 128 gigs of RAM, 300 gig spindles in those blades. And we also do have a UCS environment, Cisco UCS. We have a presence in Miami that hosts about 400 VMs over 8 servers. With HP being that our hardware model being consistent across all 4 data centers, it helps us to move servers and hardware around as we see fit. What we like to do is when we roll late new products is we don't try to add a lot of hardware. We don't have enough data center space or budgeting reasons. So we're able to shift what lands where, and that's one of the challenges that we're faced with moving to Hyper-V as well. But we are going to basically upgrade the networking. So we're going away from the old 3020 1 gig switches. We used to run 6 switches per enclosure, and it's just not sustainable. It's not scalable. So we're moving to Flex 10. We had a data center move from Sydney, Australia to Singapore. Last year we moved. We went to Flex 10 networking. We're actually moving our London data center to Amsterdam Colo. And that's when Flex 10 is coming in. We're going to also upgrade in Miami and San Jose. So that'll allow us to have, we're going to start with 20 gigs of throughput to the enclosures, and we can upgrade to 80. So that way, we can leverage Hyper-V and those technologies to carve up that bandwidth and to be more flexible that way compared to what we've been doing in the past. Same thing with storage. We have a virtual global NetApp team that focuses strictly on storage, so we consume that. But at the same time, with the way our products roll out and our fast timelines, we need to engage them constantly. So we are always in talks with them and trying to make sure that what they've put together will fit our needs and vice versa. So currently we run 6,000 series controllers in Miami and 3,000 series controllers in the other regions. So another thing that we're pushing for is to go to C mode from 7 mode. We're following the same timeline as we were with Flex 10 with the network, with the data centers moving into cluster mode. So when moving to Hyper-V, one of the big questions is, how do we connect? Currently, we're an NFS shop, right? So now we have to investigate SMB3. Can we do it direct to the NetApp? Do we front scale out file clusters? Do we use iSCSI? Those type of questions. So it's cutting edge. We're doing it all right now. We're looking to put this in, like I said, into production one to 2 months after Zen Desktop 7 RTM. So with that, I want to turn over the mic to Greg Torres, our Citrix product architect, to go over a little bit about Hyper-V architecture.
Thanks, Doug. Our production rollout schedule is closely tied to our RTM schedule. We typically have a few weeks after RTM to roll out the product that's getting released, so it's a little intimidating sometimes. Our current project is Zen Desktop 7. One of the exciting features about Zen Desktop 7 is its integration with System Center 2012 SP1 with a virtual machine manager on that. Citrix on Citrix team has evaluated System Center Virtual Machine Manager 2012 SP1, and we feel like we're going to go with that with our production Zen Desktop 7 environment, and here's an overview on it. We're going to go with two Hyper-V clusters. The first one is management. We're going to put two Zen Desktop 7 delivery controllers, two clustered System Center Virtual Machine Manager Server Pack 1 servers on there, two PBS servers, two clustered 2012 file servers to serve witness disks and certain shares.
To add something, Greg, real quick, if I can interject, what was really cool about this design that started a couple months ago, give or take, This was actually done with Citrix and Microsoft. It wasn't like these guys went in the basement and just wrote out a design. This is jointly designed by both companies. So a lot of the work that will come out of this potentially will be something, if you're looking to design an architecture similar to this, that you can look at later on down the line. So Greg mentioned, this is stuff that they're building out now. Still have some time to go. Our code isn't quite ready yet, but this is the design that they're working on in place as we speak. And I feel bad because they've got a really short deadline to accomplish this in.
Right. Of course, all this is going to be scalable. We can, you know, add more servers to any, you know, any of these clusters if we need to scale out. If we need more delivery controllers for Zen Desktop 7, it's going to be heavily automated. So our second cluster is going to hold basically all of our virtual machines for, you know, PVD desktops, pooled desktops, hosted shared desktops, you know, using Server 2012, 2008 R2, Windows 7, and Windows 8. So kind of found a lot of value here at TechEd. Some really good sessions that you guys might want to review after this are System Center Virtual Machine Manager 2012 SP1 Networking. It's kind of an advanced subject. You might want to check out Greg Cazanza's presentation on that. That was very valuable. SMB 3.0, we were kind of taking a look at that. We're going to take a closer look because of Jose Barreto's presentation on that. It seems like a very viable solution. And another little hint, you know, typically as IT type guys, we don't create that many clusters in our careers, but there's a lot of clustering involved with Hyper-V and stuff like that. So you got to pay attention to your computer account permissions in Active Directory, especially if you're not all domain admins. And here we go.
Excellent. Thanks, Greg.
Thanks. I'm locked up.
Just the clicker, do you have that? Thanks. So with that in mind, I thought that was interesting because obviously I can tell you about my 2,000 plus fictitious friends that I talk to every day, but I thought it would be better for you to hear someone else who is going to put this in production besides me because I just do it in a test scalability world. So if you doubt that Zen Desktop on Hyper-V scales, I think you can be a believer now if you didn't think it does. So here's what other cool things I've learned. I'm sharing with you their tips and tricks I've learned over the last X amount of months. Very simple formula here that people often forget. And you have to think about this for Windows Server 2012 because of the new functions of disabling the bin file. I have a blog on this that is at the very beginning of the PowerPoint. So if you go to the blog site for blogs.citrix.com, and you click on the link and look for my name, there's a huge lengthy blog that I wrote in a reference architecture with Dell, who also provided us one of the servers we demonstrated today, which is a phenomenal, wicked fast R720 server that we ran all of our infrastructure on, as well as for Synergy. So I want to thank Dell for that. When you're designing your write cache with Zen Desktop and Provisioning Server, use the simple mathematical formula. And I'm not a mathematician by any means, but this will help you figure out what the storage cost is going to be. For example, when you're building your Zen App servers, and I'm just throwing this out as an easy math here, if you require a 10 gig write cache where you're storing your temporary data, you also need to require that bin file, which I mentioned, is a requirement if you're on server 2008 R2. So if you take 10 plus 10 plus a total or times the total number of VMs you're going to create, that's what you need for storage. Simple math. It'll fluctuate here and there, give or take. But that also changes if you're going to not use Windows Server 2012. If you decide to go down the route of using 2012, here's the coolness of it. There's an article mentioned by Ben Armstrong from Microsoft that goes over in depth how you can modify the settings of the bin file by simply clicking a radio box, either choosing turn off or shut down the guest operating system. Significantly will change your storage because you won't need that extra space for the bin file. Yes, the bin file will still be there, but the value or the size of it will always remain zero. That's it. So then you go back and you do your math and you figure out and you subtract, well, if I'm not doing it on 2012, I need this much. If I am, I can subtract this much because I don't need it. So you can see here it's half the storage effectively because now I'm at 100 gig because I'm simply checking a box. The advanced settings I mentioned earlier, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Here's where you modify it. It's within the advanced settings of the controller. The default is 10. In my tests I've done, and I did that test 31 times. Over and over and over and over, hours and hours and weekends. I watched it. I've got an Excel sheet from here to China of all the data I've gathered. And to me, what I've done in our current architecture was used 15. 10's pretty safe, it's a default. You want to be a little adventurous, go ahead and flip it to 15. Here's a PowerShell command you can copy and paste. You execute this from your VMM console, and effectively what this will do is it'll go through and it'll fetch any of the VM names you match. So let's say you created 200 desktops, and you said, oh shoot, I didn't change a bin file. The reason why you couldn't do that is because you can't change the bin file in the VMM template. There is no option to change that for that particular setting. It's a Hyper-V specific setting only. So you go to your VMM server after you create all your desktops and they're all powered off. You run this PowerShell command. He's going to go through and either A, shut down the guest OS. Again, I have two different PowerShell scripts. One can shut it down if you have it, the VM is powered on by accident, and the other one is if you have them off. But it'll go through, match all the names that you've created, change the power state. You power them back up, your bin file size is now equal to 0. If you're using Windows 8, disable the high, I call it, or the first logon that pops up every single time you use Windows 8. It reduces or creates a little bit more IOPS and processing for new users that log in. So you go to your master image, you apply this registry key, especially if you're using pooled desktops, highly, highly recommend it. I don't see a reason why you need it, because your user already knows what they're going to get when they log in, so why do I need to tell them hi? So go ahead and disable this, shut it off. That will go ahead and make that user login actually faster. So with that in mind, I got about 18 minutes left. One of the things that we've thought really, really hard about is how can we still make this easier? There's always room for improvement, no matter what architecture you choose, especially if you're using VMM. One of the things that I've heard of people that worked with Zen Server or work with ESX is they always come to me and say, well, Tony, I've done this before, and it's hard on Hyper-V. I'm like, no, Hyper-V is pretty much brainless. VMM is challenging because it can do a ton of stuff, a ton of stuff. So our engineers in Citrix Redmond Labs have been working really hard on this prototype project. It's not out yet. It's not going to be part of Zen Desktop 7. It's something that we want to show you that we are working on to make this easier and to make it simpler for our deployment process. And that's really what we want to achieve when you're building out our architecture on Hyper-V, is how much better can we make it and how much faster can we make it for you? Not for us, because I've got all the time in the world to watch everything go. You guys don't. I want it to be faster for you. So what I'm going to do is show you a real quick demo. And this is a video, only because we're still writing code at this point. I highly recommend, there's a gentleman named Brian Ehlert. He works for us. He's one of the designers with a couple other people on that team that wrote this easy button demo that we're going to show you. He's on Twitter. He's a Microsoft Hyper-V MVP, a VMM MVP. He's a freaking rock star. If you don't know him, you should know him. He has another website. It's itproctology.blogspot.com. So, and it's funny because it says looking at IT from the back end, and I laugh every time I go to his website. But he's got tons of scripts, tons of things. And it's just, he's just a brilliant guy. You really should follow him and hear what he has to say. But I'm going to go ahead and attempt to play this if I can. And let's hopefully get this video showing. So what we're going to see here is VMM. We have this notion of things that we can use called service templates to make things easier. That's what their job is for. In this code demo, you're going to see it's about a 5-minute long video. So just kind of hang tight. Because we have to wait for some of this stuff to happen. So that's why it's a little bit lengthy, but I can fast forward it. We're going to show you what it's like to go from zero with no Zen Desktop infrastructure to having it deployed. So I'll go ahead and click play. Let me know if the video is a little fuzzy, but I did my best to have Brian make this as clear as we can. So first thing he's going to go through, he's going to create the service. And at this point, he's going to go ahead and browse to the Zen Desktop POC service template. I'm going to have to step over here because I can't see the video playing on that monitor. And at this point, he's going to go through and give it a name, proof of concept, because that's really what we're trying to do here. We're looking at this from various stages. One, 0 to 50 miles an hour, proof of concept. Next one, 0 to 100, which would be the next level. At this point, you can see the service templates are already there. He's going to go ahead and put in the credentials that we need, the domain rights, particularly administrative rights, to go to VMM, who's going to go to Hyper-V, and create our Zen Desktop infrastructure. The cool thing is that he's doing this from VMM. He's not going through and running a PowerShell script. He's not doing this via modifying an MSI. He's just doing this by doing this through VMM. Now, these service templates, eventually when we do, if we do make this product available, these are something that customers could use, but this is kind of the thought process. And so if you have any feedback, we definitely look forward to it. But once he provides the credentials here, it's gonna go through and he's gonna refresh and place the service. It's gonna go through and give us a little couple of checks here and there, and then he's gonna go ahead and deploy the service. Now once that happens, he's gonna go ahead and click deploy, and it'll go through, finish its task, and then you're going to see the job running. Now what that job's doing is a couple different things, and this part is gonna be a little time lengthy pretty much, but it'll go through and it will look for a couple things. A sysprep VHD, which everybody has in their environment somewhere, that's Windows Server 2012, and then a sysprep VHD later on as we're working stuff for the rest of our infrastructure. In this case, he's got one for storefront, and he has one for the controller, because we're splitting up the architecture, thinking that it's simpler to do it that way if you wanted to go big scale. Now the jobs are running, the service is executing, you can see we're creating the machine that we need to install our code on, and this whole process took 5 minutes. To install Zen Desktop manually takes about 11 and a half minutes, 12 minutes, all depends on what your controller is and then the speed of your VM that you're installing on. But this whole service template truly makes it faster. So as all the jobs go through and everything's kicking in, it basically did the dirty work for you. There's nothing you had to do but sit back, grab a coffee, or if you're at home, grab a cold one to drink and let it do its job. So I'm gonna go ahead and try to fast forward this if I can, but I can't really see too much of where the video's at. So maybe we'll just let this continue to play. While this is going, does anyone have any questions? So we have about a little over 10 minutes left. Cool, no questions yet? Okay, good. So what will happen is once this is done, again, because this takes time, so we're not trying to do any smoke and mirrors, this is just normal time for us to execute these tasks, is you're going to see the VMs that are going to appear within the VMs and Services console. And basically, he didn't have these VMs before because we created these from a template, it grabbed the right virtual networks, it grabbed the right IP addresses, it grabbed the right credentials, installed everything for you. The VM was built, and then you'll see here the services are done, and then the controller and storefront VMs are there as well. So you can see both of those are done. I think at this point, we should be at a point where we're gonna connect to it. Once we connect, you'll see, we'll show the Windows Server 2012 OS, but the cool thing is that our stack's already integrated. We went from nothing, having no VM, completely shell, just a sysprep machine to where he logs in, and not only was the VM built, but our infrastructure is already built and ready to go and configured. It's not just we did an unattended install, we already have a portion of that stuff already done and configured. So, you guys think this is valuable? If you're using VMM, can I get a couple hands up if you think, yeah, this makes sense, this could help me improve my time to put this into production or put this in a POC, per se. Cool, very good. So I could let the rest of the video play, but again, you'll get the point. He's in the console, and then all of a sudden, you'll see the Zen Desktop console expand and load right there. That's it, that whole thing was automated and done in 5 minutes. That's pretty cool. So that's serious automation. More to come. Of course, there's stuff we're building with the rest of our partners, with NetApp, with Dell, IBM, Cisco. So you're gonna see a lot more reference architectures, what we call ready validated designs. So if you're at a point where you're trying to figure out, well, you know, does this make sense, this hardware, this SAN, this particular set of servers with a Citrix infrastructure, don't waste your time. Come talk to us, come check out our website, and make sure you see that's a ready validated design. That means that we've worked with our partners, we've gone through the proper procedure, we've used stress test tools like LogMVSI, we put the design to the max so that it does make logical sense and it works. That's what a ready validated design is all about. A couple key takeaways. Of course, we support Windows Server 2012, Windows 8, and Hyper-V3. Definitely making sure that you leverage PowerShell as much as you can if you are a big shop, because there's a ton of stuff you can do from PowerShell to even these VMM templates designed. If you don't have any scripts and you'd like to know what PowerShell scripts you can use, feel free to send me an email, send me a tweet. I got a ton of scripts I can share with you if you'd like to see some more stuff you'd like to automate. So at this point, we're almost done. And so if you're in my session on Tuesday, this is where it gets kind of embarrassing, but I think someone's gonna like it. By show of hands, who wants a free solid state drive? All right, I need some help here. I can't do this on my own. So Greg, do me a favor and pick two people from the left-hand side And then I'll pick two people from the right-hand side. I'm going to pick the guy in the black shirt that says built for virtualization. And then I'm going to pick the guy in the green, it's bright up here, green striped shirt. Yep, you. Come on up.
All right. White shirt up front.
You've seen this before. You know what's going to happen.
The guy raising the hand all the way in the back.
All right, come on up.
Yep.
All right, so here's what we're going to do. This is real simple. I love this because it's fair. It's not like you have to answer a question. You just have to figure out how to play this game. Rock, paper, scissors, lizard, Spock. Okay? It's really, truly simple. And I played this on Tuesday, and I've done this before many times. That's why I'm kind of good at doing this. We're going to make it simple. We're going to make it real quick. We're not going to do lizard, Spock. Okay? We're not going to do that. So don't get confused. Do you two know how to play rock, paper, scissors? At least, sort of. So conceptually, you know that what the signs are, and you guys over there know, right? Good. Okay. So Greg, if you can go over there and judge them, this is how we're going to get through this game. There's going to be a battle, so to speak. So between you two, we're going to do the best out of three. That means you're going to do this as an example. You can only use this one gesture once. You cannot use the same gesture twice. And you can only do it three times. So for example, if I say rock, paper, scissors, you go rock, paper, scissors, you make your sign. And one of you is going to win, and one of you is going to lose. So be smart and pick the right symbol. That make sense over for you guys?
Yeah.
Okay, so Greg, if you want to go ahead and get them started. So we're going to go one, two, and then on the three, you make your sign. Yep, on the third one, you make your sign. Ready? So we're at, so you both use scissors. So you got to try it again. One of those is going to break the other one.
No more, no more scissors.
No scissors. Nope. Mm. You've already used that.
There you go.
Try it, yeah.
Tie it again.
You guys are, see, it happens sometimes like that. Okay.
Really well, minds, huh?
I'll have to figure out what I can give you in return because you guys tied. So that hasn't happened. It's fun stuff. All right, you guys go. Ready? One, two, three. You won. Okay, you get to come up. Yeah, no, just one time. But you won already. You already beat him by rock. All right, so you can come up here. If you wanted to fall to him, and you guys do it at the top. Okay, so same thing. Try not to get the same symbol. Ready?
Yep.
Okay, go for it. There you go. You're the winner. Congratulations. All right. So that concludes everything. If you have any questions, come on up. Some related content. If you're looking into App V stuff, please read some of these sessions that were already pre-recorded. Go through that. And, of course, fill out your evaluation. Love it, hate it. I need to bring more solid-state drives. Please let me know. I'll do my best. Thank you, everybody.